Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Sex galore, but no more marriages. No one pushing baby carriages. No one has to change a nappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's happy now. Oh, dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter. No remorse the morning after. Where's the sin and who's the sinner? Everybody's happy now. Girls pneumatic, girls exotic, girls ecstatic, girls erotic. Hug me, baby, and make it snap. Happy. Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So much cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
And thanks to Chris Mayville for that version of Everybody's Happy Now. Aldous Huxley's poem to his nephew in the early 1950s, found in the letters of Aldous Huxley. And it seems that we can't get away from what that song sort of reveals or exposes. We could go on for years exposing the psychopathy behind Aldous Huxley and crew. And so tonight we're rejoined by David Livingstone, who was on Monday, and it was the single most technologically impaired episode that I have ever done in 7-8 years of doing shows and several more years of other radio interviews before that. So since about 2004, I would say that was the single worst episode, technologically speaking, that I've ever done. So anyway, let's cut to it. David, welcome back to the Gnostic Media Podcast.
Great.
Or actually, the Gnostic Media Radio Show on RBN. See, I've even mixed up on what show we're doing today. Oh, boy. So we covered a lot of good ground, or you did, and I was there for the first 20 minutes and the last 40 minutes. And we had gone into Discordianism and lots of other good stuff. Where would you like to start? Would you like to launch off from there again?
I think it would be better if we kind of, you might have to go over what I discussed last time, and this time at least we can discuss it together a little bit more.
Sure. All right. That sounds, I like your idea better. All right. Well, where should we begin this time?
Yeah, there's so many places to start. We were talking about William James when we ended last time.
Yes, we were.
Lists. Yeah.
And he wrote Varieties of Religious Experience, and he basically started the field of psychology or psychiatry with a couple other people simultaneously doing it in Germany, but he was kind of the guy who kicked that off. And then his department at Harvard sort of became the spearhead of MKUltra research under Dr. Henry A. Murray. And they're the clowns who did all of the human experiments on Ted Kaczynski. And then Ted Kaczynski, of course, later tried to kill them all. You know, Ted wasn't just going on random bombing events. He was actually specifically targeting SRI and CIA guys.
I think that he was affected psychologically, so that, you know, I can't agree with everything that he said, but you could see that he had a lot of insights into the nasty stuff that he was privy to.
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, he chose bombing and violence as a remedy for the situation and what the CIA and these guys had done to him. And he was no dummy. He was professor. He was a professor of mathematics at UC Berkeley after having gone to Harvard. So he was no dummy. But I think if the future could give Kaczynski an unbiased review, they might see him as more of someone who would actually fit the hero model. But again, it's his violence tactics that got him in the pigeonhole. I mean, I don't know what else he would have done. He could have gone public with the stuff and tried to expose it, but he got himself in a pigeonhole.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess you know about the documentary called The Net.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, The Net is, I think I mapped out every on-screen document they show in the brain database.
So excellent video. I'll confess that movie basically started me on the path of my book.
Great.
Mainly because of the connections that they showed, like you mentioned, Murray, that connects back to the cybernetics group. And then it introduced me to the connection between psychedelics and the computer, which is what transhumanism is.
Right. And do you want to explain for the audience how they think that? So, and obviously you have all the Palo Alto and Silicon Valley people around with Berkeley and San Francisco right there, and there's this bleed over, and then, of course, the huge intelligence community.
Yeah.
And the intelligence community was the psychedelic community. Leary and all of the leaders of the psychedelic community, James Fadiman, who invented the mouse. He was at Harvard also, by the way, under Henry A. Murray's department. He's the one that did the last human LSD experiments in the USA. He married Ken Kesey's girlfriend. But, and then Dorothy Fadiman, she makes UN Agenda 21 films today.
Right.
You know, real quick, what's really interesting, though, is how all of these psychedelic drug leaders of the 60s and the merry pranksters, et cetera, every one of them that I can find went on to write a book or become some famous figure.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Fadiman was with IFAS, which is the International Foundation for Advanced Studies, which was founded by Al Hubbard.
Interesting. You know, and I came across that reference before, and I didn't get a chance to flush it out. I'm just pulling up the database here to look at it.
So it was Willis Harmon was president. It was at Menlo Park, so basically, you know, probably a stone's throw away from SRI. And Myron Stolaroff as well, too, was involved.
Okay, let me get Stolaroff in there because he's a really important guy in my research.
Yeah, because Stolaroff was connected to Wasson, Gerald Hurd, and the whole...
You have Stolaroff to Wasson. I don't think I have that connection. Yeah. I have him to Gerald Hurd, Oscar Janiger, Sidney Cohen, Tim Leary, Al Hubbard, Willis Harriman. But I would love to see the connection to Wasson because that would be another great one.
So yeah, IFAS was basically founded. It was part of Al Hubbard's vision, and so of course on the board were also Humphrey Osman.
And this is just IFAS.
That's right, International Foundation for Advanced Study.
Yeah, well, you know, and. So far, all of these guys that you've mentioned, except for Stolaroff, I already have marked in red, and red in the brain database means key top level MKUltra figure.
In the group. I mean, these are the guys who, well, at least, yeah, most of these guys are the guys who appear in the LSD conversation video.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Stolaroff is there. Willis Harmon is there. Who else? Fadiman in that video as well, too?
James Fadiman is not in the video that I'm aware of.
Okay. So the guy, there's, you know, there's quite a bit of scholarship these days that has studied the development of the computer out of the counterculture movement. And there's one person in particular who's identified as the main influence for making that bridge, from really going from the hippie, psychedelic focused counterculture to the computer culture, and that's Stuart Brand. And Stuart Brand was Stuart Brand was among the subjects tested at IFAS, because IFAS, it was connected to the Ampax Corporation, and which I understand was a pretty substantial technology firm in California. What they were hoping, what they were studying, was the potential of using LSD to enhance creativity, particularly inventiveness or, you know, technological creativity. And so they were hoping to use that with Ampex. And so one of the people one of their subjects was Stuart Brand. Now, as I mentioned, he's a member of the Merry Pranksters, but his most important contribution was founding of or the creation of what's called the Whole Earth Catalog.
Interesting. I do not have that in here. So Whole Earth Catalog, huh?
So the Whole Earth Catalog is really the almanac or the Bible of the, that really represented, really created the culture behind the marriage of psychedelics and computer culture. So also, you mentioned that Fadiman invented the mouse. So what was going on is that, as I mentioned in the last show, the well-known story is that Steve Jobs was introduced to most of that stuff when he was allowed to visit Xerox PARC. But Xerox PARC, most of that stuff had already been revealed back at least a decade before. I believe it was in 1968, in what's called the mother of all demos. And this is basically, if I remember correctly, it represented the work of Engelbart, who's a major character in development of the computer, who is also, I think Engelbart was also connected to psychedelics. I can't remember through who, I'd have to look that up. But the person who was filming the mother of all demos, so this is the mother of all demos, all the most important developments in computers was demonstrated then. That included an early form of the mouse, a GUI interface, sort of an early version of the internet, all this stuff already way back in 1968. So filming the demonstration was Stuart Brand.
Wow.
And then Stuart Brand, he basically goes on to become a member of Lindisfarne Association. He's also currently part of I can't remember which Transhumanist Association. So he's really the character that ties it all, but he just only really begins this entire tradition. And then there's a whole, really the person who really truly represented the switch from LSD to computers is Timothy Leary, who's basically considered kind of the leading figure of what was called the cyberpunk movement.
Well, you know, and you know, the story, the official storyline is that once Leary was banned, of course, Leary was an agent since 62.
Yeah.
But at least admitted, I think he was probably an agent at least 2 to 3 years before then. But the official storyline is that he was prohibited from discussing LSD and drugs and his promotions. So then he went to the more benign computer stuff later on.
Yeah.
And of course, that's just, you know, in my opinion, a cover story.
Right. Because what's really curious is that one of the most important theories behind the cyberpunk movement is what Leary called his 8-circuit model of consciousness, and which was basically based on the chakra system. And basically suggested that there was these various levels of consciousness which were triggered by various types of psychedelics. And so the 8-circuit model of consciousness again becomes pivotal to a lot of people, particularly Robert Anton Wilson, I believe in the cosmic trigger, and becomes a fundamental component of chaos magic. and which was led by a secret society called the Illuminates of Thanateros. So belonging to that society was Leary and Wilson, as well as William S. Burroughs. So to really understand the history of occultism in the last, basically since the late 70s, is the history of chaos magic, which basically connects all the leading figures of transhumanism today.
So where do you want to go from that point?
There's lots of directions we can go. You got any ideas or?
Oh, let's see.
Because that takes us back to Discordianism.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if you wanted to dive into that from there then.
Yeah, sure.
And we did talk about this a little bit on Monday, but unfortunately the call was so bad. So, I'd kind of like to just almost pretend that Monday's show didn't happen in a way, you know?
Yeah, me too.
So anyway, just real quick, I did get the IFAS and Osman and Fatiman and Harriman, et cetera, updated in the database over the last few minutes. So,
thanks. As I mentioned last time, when you think of most of the influential cult organizations, there are many in the last 100 years, like the Golden Dawn stands out. And of course, Aleister Crowley's OTO, which is probably the most influential. And but more recently, it seems that Discordianism is really the more influential tradition. So, as I said, it starts with a guy named Kerry Thornley, who was a friend of Lee Harvey Oswald. They were both stationed at the Tsugi Air Force Base in Japan. During the Vietnam War, and before the Vietnam War. So the Tsugi Air Force Base happened to be one of several military bases around the world that the CIA was conducting MKUltra experiments in. What's really bizarre is that Kerry writes this book called Idol Warriors about his time at one of these bases, American bases, when he befriended Lee Harvey Oswald. And the situation that he describes at the base is basically completely out of control, like just complete insubordination. Like no obedience at all, just complete buffoonery. It's completely out of control. So it's obvious that these were troops that were under psychedelic experiments. Oswald, of course, quote unquote defects to the Soviet Union and then comes back, ends up in New Orleans, and Kerry Thornley ends up in New Orleans as well. And Thornley is friends with all the leading conspirators behind the JFK assassination, like, of course, David Ferry, Guy Bannister, so on and so forth, George Demoranshi, of course, as well, too.
He was associated with Demoranshield, Kerry Thornley.
Oswald was. I'm not sure about Thornley.
Okay, because, all right, well, we know that Demoranshield was Oswald's handler.
Right.
And I've cornered in conversations online 8 or 9 times now, Judith Ferry Baker, who was Lee Harvey Oswald's mistress. And she's admitted that Demoranshield was his handler, etc. But every single time I've asked her if she had met or if she had overheard Oswald ever discussing anything about Gordon Wasson, she refused to answer that question on 9 different occasions.
Right.
And even sent me a nasty email a couple months ago about it, and I sent her own quotes back, and she failed to respond to that even. And anyway, that all ties, Demoranshield ties to Wasson, and we'll be right back.
Exactly.
Happy, everybody's happy now.
lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking.
Ladies and gentlemen, you missed it. All of our mapping data during the break. We were discussing Ruth Forbes, Payne Young, Arthur Young, Lee Harvey Oswald, George de Morenshield, Gordon Wasson, all of their connections behind the scenes. Where you want to start with one of those names? You want to start with Arthur Young or Ruth Young?
Yeah, so there's, we talked about Ruth and Michael Payne, who were friends of Lee Harvey Oswald. It was one of them that got Oswald his job at the book depository.
Oh, really?
And so, right. So Ruth Forbes Payne, she was the daughter of what's her mother's name? Her mother's first mother married last name Payne, but her first husband was Arthur M. Young, and Arthur M. Young participated at the seances, the MK Ultra seances with Andrea Paharich at the Round Table Foundation when they summoned the Council of Nine. Arthur M. Young was also closely connected with Everett Smith, who was a key member of the OTO, friends with Allen Ginsberg and the whole crew. Who else is there? Ruth Payne's mother was also friends with Alan Dulles's mistress. Right? It's crazy. So, you know, that's how close. I mean, basically, Alan Dulles, there's a case where I can't remember the details exactly, but she was on the stand. Ruth Payne was on the stand, and he's asking the question when it came around to her mother or something like that. Of course, he immediately changed the subject. Because she was his mistress. What's her name? She worked with him all the way back in Switzerland during World War I, and she used to work closely with Carl Jung.
Let me see if I have her in there. Probably not. I don't see anything.
Mary Bancroft is what her name is.
Mary Bancroft. Okay, so she's. I didn't realize that the two of them were lovers. So, let me connect that one also. All right, there she is. Now she's in there, connected to Dulles, and she was Office of Strategic Services. Hung out. She was also lovers with Henry Luce.
Oh, there you go.
Apparently, she was lovers with Woody Allen too.
Oh gosh!
Wow! So there's the connection between Alan Dulles and Woody Allen, folks. Ooh, wow!
Yeah.
So
Ruth Hyde and Michael Payne. So Ruth Hyde's mother was Ruth Forbes Payne, who first married Arthur M. Young.
You know, I did have her in there listed somewhere as friends and lovers with Alan Dulles. I don't know why I didn't see it, but it may have been under a different place there. Anyway, good.
Yeah, so that's the whole network there.
Well, that's a pretty close network for the JFK assassination. Now, in my first article on Wasson, I revealed the connections with him and George de Morenshield. George de Morenshield was quote-unquote suicided right before the media showed up to interview him regarding his affiliations with Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, apparently, Lee Harvey Oswald could have also been, let's see, let me pull him up real quick. Oswald, he could have been Alex Hiddell, and there's also a possible connection to one of the guys coming out of the Riley Coffee Company there went by Pierre Lafitte, who also went by Louis Hiddell. And then Lee Harvey Oswald's second name is Alex Hiddell. So there is a possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald was also Pierre Lafitte. And Pierre Lafitte is the guy who pushed Frank Olson out of the New York Hotel 10th floor window.
Oh, wow. There you go. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so it could be that Lee Harvey Oswald is actually the one who caused the whole exposure of the MKUltra program.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder.
But of course, the CIA is not going to tell us if Lee Harvey Oswald was Pierre Lafitte, was Alex Sedel, was Louis Sedel, right?
Yeah.
Hold that thought, but we'll be right back.
Okay.
And we're back, and so we were discussing Kerry Thornley and his ties with Lee Harvey Oswald and Discordianism, the Church of the Subgenius, and the JFK assassination et al. They're all so closely tied together. We're right at the center nexus of JFK assassination here. So what I want to do is, this is also the border of, or the beginnings of, transhumanism. And apparently you were saying during the break that Kerry Thornley also coined the term paganism. I always thought the word paganism was older.
It's older, but he coined the use of it to refer to the modern, the modern forms of neo-paganism.
Okay, so neo-paganism specifically then, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, these are all trends of occultism that were becoming popular, but he's the one who first started referring to them as paganism. So it was borrowing from his reference that the founder of the Church of All Worlds was basically... The Church of All Worlds, which is, maybe we'll come back to it later. This is a key organization as well. This is an organization founded on the books of Robert Heinlein. Robert Heinlein was a member of the OTO who was hanging around with Jack Parsons in Laurel Canyon.
All right, so Parsons.
So that's where we have the beginning of neo-paganism. So what's important is that, I mean, transhumanism really derives from Discordianism, chaos magic, and neo-paganism, which becomes techno-paganism, right? Which is what transhumanism is. So the importance here is the idea of paganism. And so what I mentioned in my book, which I think this is speculative, but I've heard this mentioned before, but now I think there's stronger evidence for it, is that JFK assassination could have been what's called the killing of the sacred king. Because otherwise, it doesn't seem to be much reason for it. As I mentioned, on the evening of the assassination, Kerry Thornley basically announces himself. He says, "Hi, I'm Kerry Thornley. I masterminded the assassination. How do you do?" He made a complete joke about it. So it's what's amazing. I don't know if I mentioned, but Jim Garrison basically started to suspect that the Discordian Society was a CIA front, that Thornley was behind the assassination, and that Thornley served as Oswald's double. And the thing is that Thornley had a reputation of being quote-unquote uncanny lookalike of Oswald. And there's many times that he was being confused. He would go, he lived very close to Oswald and was often confused with Oswald himself as he used to go in and out of Oswald's place. So, when you look at basically the pagan background in this network, it is possible that this was the idea. Do you know what the sacred king is? The idea of the sacred king?
I think so.
So basically modern paganism, which is really popularized by Gerald Gardner, but it was based on the theories of two primary historians. One of them was Margaret Murray. She's famous for having written the various books on the witch cult of Europe. She basically speculated that the witches, medieval witches, were actually represented the survival of ancient pagan mystery rites, specifically the worship of Diana. And the other one is James Frazer, who wrote The Golden Bough.
Right.
And The Golden Bough speculated that the ancient dying god mysteries were based on the worship of the king as the living embodiment of the sun god, and then the periodic need to kill the king and replace him with a new god who is the sun god.
Right.
The sun of. So these were the theories that basically were incorporated by Gardner to create his pseudo-paganism, which has been called neo-paganism. So this is, so as we said, that's where you get the beginnings of transhumanism. So, you know, this the cult, Gardner, of course, is the founder of Wicca, and there you have one of the primary occult influences in modern times alongside what later becomes the chaos magic. And chaos magic, again, is influenced by Cary Thornley's Discordianism. So the other societies that grew out of this Discordian society, which, as I mentioned, Garrison thought was a CIA front, is two organizations. The first one is the Church of the Subgenius. And basically, it's a joke religion. And they worship this fictitious character, which they've invented, called Bob Dobbs. And they basically, their ultimate principle is what they call slack. So that's how they influenced cultural meme. And the other one is the Moorish Orthodox Church. What's really weird about the Moorish Orthodox Church is that it emerged out of what's called the Moorish Science Temple, which gave birth to the Nation of Islam. So it was actually all these beatniks, hippies, that were part of this Moorish Science Temple. But the strange thing is that Moorish Science Temple, first of all, it's a branch of Prince Hall Freemasonry, which is a kind of Freemasonry for African Americans, and it's basically sort of a black nationalist pseudo-Islamic movement. So it's strange that you get these various, you know, Jewish beatniks that were came out of this group and then founded the Moorish Orthodox Church. The leading person in this organization is a guy named Peter Lamborn Wilson. And he also goes by the name of Hakim Bey. So this guy is a major influence. He's also closely connected to Robert Anton Wilson. He came up with this theory, what he called temporary autonomous zones, which influenced the rave culture. It also became the basis of the Burning Man festival. So basically a major character in what's now called techno-paganism. So maybe from there we need to backtrack, because to look at transhumanism, we have to go back to cyberpunk. And that begins, as I said, with Timothy Leary. So,
all right.
Yeah.
So let's hit cyberpunk then.
Yeah. So, you know, what's particularly interesting is first under cyberpunk, of course, is an evolution of punk, and punk emerged out of the New York underground that grew out of William S. Burroughs's influence in New York. So he had a whole entourage of worshipers from his apartment, which he called the Bunker in New York. And the people who were responsible for building up his reputation were basically the French postmodernists, or a network of French postmodernists, but basically a professor at Columbia, whose last name was, I think, if I remember his name correctly, Lotringer, something like Lotringer. And So he holds this conference in New York called Schizo Culture. If you can imagine, right? And this publication called Semiotext, and which basically, and we talked about Trotsky, and that's where it all goes back to as well. So basically, it goes back to Trotsky, who was a member of the Situationist International, and a leading figure, a close friend of William S. Burroughs. Apparently, supposedly, it was Trotsky who supplied Burroughs his heroin in London. So Trotsky and Burroughs were both really the leading figures of what was called Swing in London. And that is a network that swirled around Hollingshead that we mentioned last time, who was Leary's emissary to London.
Right.
As well as R.D. Lang. R.D. Lang is another key character. So R.D. Lang really represented, he's a Tavistock dude. He really represented a type of psychiatry called anti-psychiatry. And that was really popularized by Kesey's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It was the idea that was that the modern psychiatry had a completely errant way of dealing with schizophrenia. And he came up with all these novel ways of, you know, treating schizophrenic as normal people. He had this innovative clinic where the doctors would basically live side by side with the schizophrenics. So it's what's called anti-psychiatry. And it's, again, based, as we mentioned last time, on the idea that schizophrenia is actually a false label. That
it's actually shamanism, or they're peering into another world.
Yes, exactly. It's like a divine...
Well, you know, just on a side note here, there is a professor, he was working on his professor at something like that down in Australia. It goes by the name of Chris Rudge, and he's a big fan of this guy, Artie Lang, and the Tavistock Institute material, and he's actually out there essentially continuing this aspect of Lang's work now.
Right.
I don't know if you've come across Chris Rudge yet.
Okay, I'll look for it. And of course, Artie Lang was a major. He was a major figure at ASIL, an almost foundational figure for Price and.
I don't have him connected to the Esalen Institute, but it's no surprise. I mean, he's definitely one of the key figures at. Millbrook, you know.
Exactly right. So in 1978, Lotringer holds this Schizo Culture conference in New York. And the conference is basically on madness in prison. So it basically is kind of a reflection of Artie Lang's anti-psychiatry. And it featured, or basically was designed to celebrate William S. Burroughs. All kinds of people were involved in it, especially a lot of popular bands like Blondie and Men Without Hats and that whole group. So basically it was really the culture, what they call the no wave music culture that developed out of the New York underground. So it's out of there that William McLaren, because Malcolm McLaren, he started managing the New York Dolls, who were considered, you know, kind of a proto punk group, who were part of this circle. And so Malcolm McLaren, basically, he was influenced by Situationism, which is the same philosophical tradition that ties these people all the way back to Trotsky. Trotsky had this weird plan. He called it Project Sigma, and it was a revolutionary program which he intended to use, like a Situationist program. And so this is why this entire project represents basically a continuation of Trotsky's Project Sigma, which is like a subversive program to use Situationist tactics to undermine culture. So all these bands, and particularly Malcolm McLaren and the Sex Pistols was very much an express, like Malcolm McLaren, he hated music. Or he, I don't know if he hated music, but he hated pop music, and he hated, like, he couldn't care less about that. He made that the management and the creation of the Sex Pistols was very much a subversive project, a situationist project. So I put that in background to show the background from situationism itself, although it's kind of considered a philosophical movement. It also has occult roots. It's also rooted back in Dada, in surrealism, and particularly Lecherism. Lecherism basically is a Kabbalistic kind of philosophy as well. And I'm only mentioning it in passing, but this is why I treat more in detail the history of Dada and surrealism in my book, to show the very occult origins and how there's a continuity in all the people involved in carrying these ideas through and right up through the development of situationism, and then most importantly the punk movement, which, as I said, was centered around William S. Burroughs. Because William S. Burroughs, really, right up until very recently, he's really, really remained the ultimate guru in this entire tradition. So we talked about punk, development of punk. So out of punk, then you get cyberpunk. And so the punk movement as well is closely associated with the emergence of chaos magic. And chaos magic was spearheaded largely by this secret society called the Illuminates of Thanateros. And Thanateros is a composite word from two Greek words meaning death, and Thanat means death, and Eros means, they easily translate it as love, but it actually means sex or lust. So basically it's the god of love and death. And they worship Baphomet, the supposed goat-headed idol of the Templars. So to this society belonged Leary, Robert Anton Wilson, and William S. Burroughs. So chaos magic basically is the new direction for magic. And what's new about it is that, first of all, it's based on the teachings of Austin Osman Spare, who was a student of Aleister Crowley, but he basically kind of developed he broke with Crowley and kind of developed his own tradition. So what's new about chaos magic is that traditionally magic was very tradition-oriented. You would belong to a society, at the Golden Dawn, and so on and so forth, and you were expected to conform pretty strictly to what were the established traditions and methods and practices for those schools. Whereas chaos magic is basically like a postmodernist magic where they don't care about any of that stuff. They don't care about tradition. All they care about is whether it works or not. So, you can use any kind of tools. You can use modern implements. You can use, as I mentioned last time, you can use light bulbs instead of candles. And most importantly, you can use computers. And that's how you get the birth of techno-paganism.
All right. And we'll be right back. No more thinking, no more thinking, no more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now. And we're back. Guest tonight is David Livingston, discussing his new book, Transhumanism. What's the subtitle, David?
The History of a Dangerous Idea.
Great title, man. Thanks. Hopefully you're selling a lot of it, because a lot of copies of that, because people, you know, really need to wake up. And and Dave Asprey, guys like him, who've done a lot of great work in exposing all of the bad diet and low-fat diet, all that stuff, all the grains and everything. You know, he's so caught up in the transhumanism stuff, and he's done such great work elsewhere, and I hate to see him, you know, promoting crap like this.
Well, I think that's the, you know, it was a realization for me. You know, the irony is that it started hitting me when I read I guess, which one was it? The Da Vinci Code?
Yeah.
Where he talks about CERN. I mean, the guy basically implicates CERN with the Illuminati. And because, you know, the computer's been, and the internet has been a pretty astounding tool, right? I mean, it's been revelatory. So, but then I had to think, well, I mean, if CERN developed the web, right? I mean, it's like, it kind of it was hard to be honest with myself. I had to say, well, I mean, come on. Like, obviously, this whole thing was planned. And, you know, if the internet developed out of ARPANET, then we kind of have to be a little suspicious, you know? And they really didn't want to suspect it to be as bad as it was. But I think it helped me come to terms with it when I accepted that the computer internet are amazing tools. So it's not because they created them that they're all bad. But we have to accept the fact that they did create both the computer and the internet for you, basically, as I'm suggesting in my book. I mean, this is the ultimate conspiracy of modern times. This is, you know, we have the all-seeing eye on the dollar bill, and what they are referring to there is the project to create the computer. The computer was from the beginning intended to ultimately be artificial intelligence, because that's what the cybernetics product group or project was all about, was ultimately to create artificial intelligence as a living machine, which was what the computer was going to be, and basically to serve as both the ultimate surveillance tool, but as the ultimate surveillance tool, it was interpreted to be basically an omniscient machine and effectively a god. And that's not my interpretation. This is what these guys are saying. And when you look at, if you look at all the exponents of transhumanism today, most of these guys are behind this project called Global Mind. And there's a lot of sort of Global Mind or Global Brain exponents. But it all returns to the same idea. There's the Global Brain Institute or Global Mind Institute. And so, which we can go back to, they're all influenced by Tarot de Chardin. He's the leading influence behind this entire idea. And for them, their plan, specifically, there's a guy, and his name is Francis Haylion. He's a Dutch professor who heads this Global Mind Institute. And in his own words, the computer is going to be a living being, a living omniscient being, and that is going to serve as a god.
All right, and hold that thought. The computer, the internet, the computer's infrastructure as an omniscient, omnipresent god. We'll be right back. If you want to take callers.
Sure.
All right, 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy?
And we're back.
Everybody's also
the internet as God. The computer is God. And when you think about what David is saying and transhumanism and this whole movement and Ray Kurzweil and who else is behind it? Wavy Gravy, Bob Dobbs, and the Church of the Subgenius, and all these guys. They're actually the key guys promoting it. Who else is out there promoting it these days and trying to create this internet god?
Well, you know, what's really fascinating is that the lot of the people who are associated with this now, there's kind of a simultaneous group that overlaps. So there's the transhumanists, and then there's all the leading occultists. So you got people like Douglas Rushkoff. He's written a lot of books. He's like really deep in the cyberpunk movement. He's the guy who, you know, he's produced some pretty exceptional documentaries like the Merchants of Cool, which is really important. Generation Like, which is his more recent one. And so what's curious is that a lot of these guys are associated with the disinformation company, which is founded by.
Excuse me, I was taking a drink of water. You just almost made me spit up all over the computer here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wow. So the Disinformation Company, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't know, they print books like, you know, the conspiracy book. They print Graham Hancock, and the company's logo is, of course, Satan, a red Satan with horns.
Disinfo, yeah. They have got disinfo.com, right, which is like... Yeah. I think what's their slogan? It's like everything you know is, you know, untrue or something.
Right.
Like that.
Right?
You know,
thank you for making that connection, because I've been looking at them for a while, man.
So Ralph Metzger, he refers to himself as a warlock. He's basically a follower of Aleister Crowley, and he sees his business as a magical undertaking.
Who runs? Ralph Metzner runs Disinfo.
Metzger. So
Metzger, not Metzner, that was friends with Leary at Millbrook.
Right. Metzger.
Metzger. Okay.
Metzger. I think his first name is Ralph. It's my last name, Metzger.
Oh.
So Richard Metzger. So they have produced what's called the Book of Lies. And the Book of Lies, of course, is named after Crowley's book by the identical title. And this book is a compilation of basically an anthology of articles by all the leading occultists of modern times, like Genesis P. Ulrich, Eric Davis, who's the author of Technosis. Hakim Bey or Robert Anton Wilson that I mentioned earlier, who's the founder of the Orthodox Church, Moorish Orthodox Church. Phil Hine, who is the author of, who's the leading author of in Chaos Magic. Grant Morrison, the comic writer, who writes the foreword to Phil Hine's book. You know, basically the entire gamut of modern occultists. So this is the Disinformation Company. And, you know, the Disinformation Company has also been writing, has published books by Alex Jones and distributed his videos. So
you're almost as bad as me for maybe even worse for exposing agents there, dude. How do you spell Richard Metzger's name, last name?
Metzger is Metzger.
And then he goes on to found the Disinformation Corporation?
He founded the Disinformation Corporation.
Oh, that's good stuff, man. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, thanks. It was a pretty interesting find. So this is the modern day network, right? This is the crew that, like, you look at the list of authors in there, and that's them. They're all interconnected. So they all interconnect with the people involved in the transhumanism movement. And this is why I emphasize the history of chaos magic and Discordianism and so on and so forth, because that's where it connects. So the one of the leading people, there's two of them actually. I mentioned one of them is Douglas Rushkoff, and the other one is R.U. Sirius. So R.U. Sirius, real name something Goffman, he founded the preeminent cyberpunk publication. Was called Mondo 2000, and you know, we talked about the MK Ultra really shaping the direction of the computer and really trying to manipulate the perception of the potential of the computer with as being closely aligned with psychedelics. So Mondo 2000 was really a key publication. Like, most people who followed it have no idea. Basically, you got from Mondo 2000 to Wired. You know, there's not a direct correlation, but it's very closely connected. So Are You Serious? Mondo 2000 basically is a publication that featured Robert Anton Wilson, Timothy Leary, Hakim Bey, you know, really the whole crew. So it's very, very much an expression of what's being called techno-paganism. That's what this is. And Disinformation Company is closely aligned to this so-called techno-pagan culture.
Oh boy, this is good stuff, man. Okay, so I'm just plugging data in here as you're talking. If you want to just keep going, I'll just keep plugging data. But what was the project that Richard Metzger created off of Book of Lies?
Well, I mean, you have his disinformation company.
So that's just directly the spinoff of. Did you say he had another project named directly like Book of Lies?
Yeah. So the Book of Lies was published by the Disinformation Company. That's like his. That's their or his project. And as I said, it's an anthology of occultism. It's basically all articles about Crowley, magic. You know, Julius Evola, the Templars, the Assassins. There's an article in there by Lavenda.
Now, Book of Lies was not written by Crowley, or is there two Book of Lies?
There's two. So the original one was written by Crowley, and this new one is borrowing the same title.
Got it. All right. So now that makes sense. So that influences him.
Yeah.
And then they do Book of Lies 2.
Pretty much. Exactly.
All right, sorry about the details there. I'm just, going, whoa. All right, so, and somebody mailed me a copy of the Book of Lies recently, too, so I'll be diving into that. Hans has been reading all of this stuff, too, for our research on music and mind control. Have you been following that series?
I have a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so there's an extreme level of overlap between the two of your work as well, all of our work, essentially.
Yeah.
It's forming a very tight
circle.
A good small group now. So,
yep.
Good job on that. All right, so let's get back to where were you going from there?
That's a good question. That really covers it. I mean, well, Are You Serious, as I said, is the guy who was behind Mondo 2000.
And he's out of Disinformation Corporation as well?
Well, no, but he's connected to that whole, all those people. So they overlap.
Right, all right. Like, all right, I'm gonna stop plugging in data right now because it's distracting me. I'm just going, whoa! I'm like seeing whole new levels of connections here.
Yeah, like basically, what you have is these people. So they're all practitioners of chaos magic, and which, as I said, is like a postmodernist magic, which can use, which is not tied to any kind of particular tradition or type of practice. So they can use anything. So they're kind of their thing is to use modern tools. Like they'll teleconference a ritual, or they'll incorporate computers in their rituals, and that's what's called techno-paganism. So all these people all overlap, and like one of the leading techno-pagans is a guy called Mark Pesky. This is a guy who tried to establish sort of the equivalent of HTML, but for virtual reality. A pretty well established tech guru. So he's also, of course, connected with Mondo 2000. Rudy Rucker was another one. As I mentioned, Douglas Rushkoff. Who's the other one? Anyway, so these are all the guys. Mark Pesky writes an article for the Book of Lies. So again, another really important person in this story is Genesis P. O. Ridge. Have you heard about him?
No.
He's more popular in England. So he founded this influential or industrial music group, like experimental music group called, he had a couple of bands, like Throbbing Gristle was one of them, and Psychic TV was the other. And he was a he was good buddies with William S. Burroughs, of course. Used Burroughs' cut-up techniques. And he founded what's called the Temple of Psychic Youth. And the Temple, or Topi for short. And Topi basically is an offshoot of the Illuminates of Thanateros. So his recent project, which actually leads us back to Caitlyn Jenner, because
I'm going to have to correct you on that. It's Bruce Jenner.
Bruce Jenner?
Yes.
So he underwent this project. Basically, him and his wife died somehow. So he decided after her death that they were going to merge and become the same person. So he's undergone all kinds of modification that he's basically like an unidentified gender, and which he views as, you know, the what is considered the true history, the true course of human evolution. And really, this is the vision of transhumanists, that they, I saw a video, a guy did a video online, which is excellent, because I fully agreed, and this is what I've seen in my own research, is that, you know, according to Kabbalah, this has always been a longstanding belief, is that, and this was first expressed by Plato on the Symposium, that originally human beings were a single gender until they were divided, so that in this life, human beings are looking for their sort of lost half. And this is a fundamental belief. That's why Plato is a catalyst, right? And it's not an accident. That's why his theories, you find them in Kabbalah and back and forth. So as I mentioned, the idea of an original androgynous being is an underlying belief of the Kabbalah, and seems to be what is being also pursued by the transhumanist movement, as demonstrated by Genesis Peel Ridge.
All right, so what's the next step? Where do we go from here? Who's, should we bring it forward some? You want to talk about Ray Kurzweil and these guys?
So Are You Serious, as the guy who was the founder of Mondo 2000, he recently became the editor of Humanity Plus. So Humanity Plus is the publication of the organization by the same name, which is the rebranding, the attempt to rebrand what's called the World Transhumanist Association. And that's really the organization that, well, not really so much kicked it all off, but at least really put the big push behind transhumanism. Before them was the Extropy Institute that was founded by Max Moore. So Max Moore, he's a real character, this guy. I sent Henry Macko a link to Max Moore's article called In Praise of the Devil, and he just published snippets of it. But basically, yeah, so obviously Max Moore is a Luciferian and basically celebrates the worship of Lucifer in his article, and showing basically what the basis of transhumanism is. It's a, you know, complete rejection of God and the belief that man is going to become God by taking over his own evolution. So Max Moore, of course, works closely with Ray Kurzweil. And Ray Kurzweil is also connected with all the guys who are the leaders of Humanity Plus. The two guys are, one guy, his name is David Pierce, and the other is Nick Bostrom. Nick Bostrom, he's a guy who gives like talks on TED Talk and stuff like that. He's also a professor at Oxford. So he's kind of like considered a leading philosopher of transhumanism right now. And his book is really what helped me unravel the occult history of this of transhumanism. He wrote a book called The History of Transhumanism, and he pretty much lays it all out. But like a typical, typical occult history, he mentions the entire tradition that leads up to transhumanism, which is all occult figures, without actually openly mentioning that they were occultists. Now, to give an example, there's Rudy Rucker, who's another influential technological figure who was involved in Mondo 2000. So fortunately, I have a copy of that original copy of one of their magazines. And Rudy Rucker refers to their work as the Great Work. So that's like an open admission that they're Freemasons. The Great Work refers to the project of Freemasonry. He even said that he says our effort is the Great Work. And he says, much like the cathedral builders of the Middle Ages, which is, of course, is how Freemasons understand their project. The Great Work means the rebuilding of the Temple of Jerusalem, which supposedly was revived by the Templars, who, of course, are named after the Temple of Jerusalem. So basically openly admitting that these guys are Masonic occultists. And where was I? Rudy Rucker, 1-2000, transhumanists. Right. So Nick Bostrom, in his History of Transhumanism, he basically describes it as beginning with the alchemists of the Middle Ages. He mentions Francis Bacon, who, of course, is considered pretty much the founder of Rosicrucianism. Marsilio Ficino, Pico de la Mirandola. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. Those are the two famous magi of the Renaissance. And then from there, most importantly, I think I mentioned this last time, the two most important symbols or legends of transhumanism is the first one is the golem. And the golem is a living being that was supposedly brought to life through Kabbalistic magic from inanimate matter by a famous rabbi in Prague called Rabbi Lowe. And what's interesting about Rabbi Lowe is that he was active in Prague when Prague was really the center of Kabbalistic study in Europe. At the time when John Dee traveled to Prague to propagate the Rosicrucian mission. So it's really out of these efforts in Prague that the Rosicrucian movement emerged out of Germany. And this is according to Frances Yates and her Rosicrucian Enlightenment. So the golem and this idea of creating a living being out of inanimate matter is really the project of transhumanism. And this is why the most popular example of the golem story is Frankenstein. And it's acknowledged. It's acknowledged in Frankenstein is an adaptation.
All right. You're going to have to hold that thought. We got to get a break now.
Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So much cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter. No remorse. No
all right.
After. Who is a sin and who's.
It's Gnostic Media Radio Show, GnosticMedia.com. We're here with David Livingston discussing his latest book, Transhumanism. David, what's your website again?
conspiracyschool.com.
All right. So where do you want to pick up from here on our tour through the history of transhumanism?
Well, we were talking about the golem and Frankenstein.
Yes, indeed.
So Frankenstein was written, as we all know, by Mary Shelley. And she was the daughter of William Godwin, who was the founder of anarchism, and Mary Wollstonecraft, who was the founder of feminism. So Godwin was closely associated with William Blake. And William Blake is really important. I mean, after Swedenborg, he's really kind of the most often mentioned mystic of modern times. As I mentioned last time, it was the voice of William Blake that Ginsberg thought he heard when he had his psychotic episode. So this shows the network that Mary Shelley was involved in. And of course she hung around with Lord Byron, who was deeply into the occult as well. Her own husband was Bysshe Shelley, who wrote on Rosicrucianism and other subjects. So basically, Frankenstein was an occult novel. They had some bizarre theories in the 1800s, things. They believed that electricity was the source of life. So Frankenstein was basically based on this occult idea that, you know, if you could zap somebody with enough electricity, you could actually drive some life back into them. But really, basically, it's an alchemical tale. It's an occult tale. It was a more recent version of the Golem story. And I was going to say this last time. We can get back to this later. I'll just mention it now. But Superman, because comic books as well are entirely derived from the occult. So the Superman as well, was named after Nietzsche's Superman, is also a Golem story. But we'll get back to that. So basically, the first to mention that we have the Golem, first of all, and then Frankenstein. So just to prove that I'm not speaking off the top of my head, and this is not theory, there's Norbert Wiener. Norbert Wiener, who's one of the founders, there's two guys who are basically the leaders of the cybernetics group. The cybernetics group, if anybody's forgotten, this is a CIA front that from which developed both the development of the computer and MKUltra. So Norbert Wiener wrote a book called God and Golem. And he explicitly explains how their project to create artificial intelligence is an attempt much like the early attempts to create a golem, and also mentions the Frankenstein story. The other story that he mentions is the Sorcerer's Apprentice. And this is another important story for transhumanism as well, because the Sorcerer's Apprentice was written by Goethe, who was a member of the Illuminati and was also influenced by the Golem story. So basically, the strange thing is that this guy is Norbert Wiener. He's supposed to be, you know, a completely legit, very influential American scientist. We're working for the American government, the CIA, so on and so forth. He, in his book, God and Golem, he basically explains how black magic has been misunderstood and improperly castigated, but really it represented, daring forays into science that need to be revived. And so he specifically mentions the Witch's Sabbath as being an example. And of course, the Golem and so on and so forth. So,
well, you know, looking at the cover of that book, boy, there's some occult symbolism right on the front cover of it. You know, just so you know, David, we do have a call on the line if you want to take a call sometime.
Sure, anytime you're ready.
You want to do that now?
It's up to you.
Well, actually, we have a break right now, it looks like. So why don't we do that right after the break?
Sounds good.
All right. When is that? How much longer do we have there, Mike? Oh, that long. All right, we're back. And you know what? Why don't we take a caller while we're back here before we dive back in? David, you ready for that?
Yeah, I'm ready. Thanks.
All right, let's go to Sean there.
Hey, guys. My studies seem to be taking me in this same direction. I didn't want to look into Crowley, but all points are pointing that direction. First of all, let me. Would you give this man's name out again, Jan, and his website, his contact information?
You're talking about the guest, David.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's David Livingstone. And David, what is your website again?
My website is conspiracyschool.com, and that's where I have information on all my books. The book that we're discussing is my latest, which is called Transhumanism, The History of a Dangerous Idea.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you. You know, here I want to read something to you right out from 1904 out of Crowley's The Book of the Law. And it says, observe for yourselves the decay of the sense of sin, the growth of innocence and the innocence and the irresponsibility, the strange modifications of the reproductive instincts with a tendency to become bisexual or epicene, the childlike confidence in progress, combined with nightmare fear of catastrophe, against which we are yet half unwilling to take precautions. Does that not, I mean, wow, huh?
That's terrific. Thanks. I'm going to look that one up.
I was going to ask you, have you done some of where I've been looking at, as I've seen evidence that would say that the Mormon Church has... There's a whole part of them that doesn't seem to be disputed by the body of the church itself going towards this transhumanism. Have you come across anything along those lines?
Well, the funny thing is that I think there's even an article in Wikipedia about Mormon transhumanism.
Wow.
So it's not I've had time to look into it more deeply. I suspect, and I think rightly so, that obviously there's multiple occult influences going behind Mormonism, but I don't have any details. What's strange is that Peter Lavenda actually wrote a book recently about Mormonism and occultism.
Oh, really?
He can be an excellent source, but he's not to be trusted.
Well, you know, Peter Lavenda is the author of the Necronomicon, so there you go.
As far as I know, the Necronomicon, there was a real version of that that might have been something, and then there was one that's just a bunch of gibberish.
Was it H.G. Wells? Or no, it was...
It was.
Lovecraft.
Uh-huh. Or Lovecraft.
Lovecraft basically invented the story. It was supposed to be written by a guy called the Mad Arab, thousands of years before.
Right, but it's only cited by Lovecraft in a novel, and then...
Everybody was looking for it, thinking it was real, so Peter Lavenda, the name pseudonym of Simon, he wrote it.
If you go to the U.S. Copyright Office website and look up the Necronomicon, it goes to Peter Lavenda.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely interested in. I've got a lot of friends trapped in that, and I'm just there's no help. You know, they know it all, and they can't hear you, anything you say to them. I was also going to ask about.
I know that feeling, Sean.
We all know that.
I was going to ask about. There's a musical group that I've heard sing a lot about this, and in fact, you were just talking about the Frankenstein and the Golem and whatnot.
Yeah.
Tool, Maynard James Keenan. Have you tied him into any of this?
Well, that's a really good question on Tool. I was thinking about them yesterday, and I've seen them and Perfect Circle in concert a couple times. In fact, ran into Alex and Allison Gray at one of the shows. And of course, I had them on, and I was all a part of that whole community years ago and woke up from that slumber. But, I have no evidence regarding Tool other than the obvious, associations and, lyrics that they have, but...
Absolutely, and he flat tells you, he, don't believe me, I am a tool. He is a tool. He's that, the name of the band, And then you look at his life, and he's always been an enigma.
Not only that, but if you go to a Tool concert, you're a tool, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have been there as well. Okay, well, thank you guys very much. Fantastic work. I will definitely be getting your book, Mr. Livingston. So thank you, Jan.
You're welcome, Sean. Much appreciated for your feedback as well. All right, so where were we? There's so much here. So, yeah, I was just plugging in Peter Lavenda and the Necronomicon the other day, and he connects. He wrote the Sinister Forces. I interviewed Peter 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I apologize for this the other day, folks. I think it was on Facebook, so I'll say it publicly out loud. Probably most of the early guests I had on were agents and whatnot. So again, my apologies, and there you have it.
Yeah, I hear you. I mentioned a few in my books, made some similar mistakes as well.
Yeah, well, you know, and you start researching this stuff, and then you get into their background. It's like, you know, crap, him too, her too. This, here's another one. And once you begin to see the pattern, you know, then it really begins to unfold. But I didn't really begin to see how the intelligence world worked until around, you know, 2012-ish.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, sometimes they provide great evidence, right? I mean, Lavenda, he, which book is one of their Sinister Forces book? He's the one who mentions all these connections between Mary Bancroft and the Morning Shield, Robert M. Young. So they can be useful.
Well, you know, he did name, years ago, he named Puhuric as, you know, MK Ultra.
Right.
And I used him as a citation in one of my earlier books before I had the primary documentation on Puhuric. Now there's a lot of evidence of...
Yeah.
Of Puhuric,
yeah.
you know, you can just read letters of Aldous Huxley, and there's at least half a dozen letters where Huxley is talking about Puhuric's experiments and stuff. And of course, there's no way, you know, and they're supposed to be secret MKUltra experiments, but here Huxley's writing all about them, and they're published in his book, you know.
Yeah. Classic Huxley.
Classic Huxley. So we got another 10 minutes for the next break. Where do you want to go next in this saga? Do you want to get into... You know, I know you already covered chaos magic and, you know, the computer postmodernism. You want to cover the new age?
Yeah, we could. Well, I mean, that takes us back to the Chardin. I mean, you know, really, it goes back, first of all, it goes back to William James.
Right. Well, right? You know, I mean... Have you ever noticed it's a big circle jerk of these guys all citing each other and how intelligent they think they are? And
absolutely. And of course, you know, James heavily influenced Huxley and so on and so forth. But William James, this begins with is the idea of a religious experience. And it's the idea that drugs can induce a religious experience. That's what MKUltra is. So that's how he inspired Huxley and out of that MKUltra. But he also began a discussion around the idea of a collective consciousness, which was identified with Eastern mystical experiences. So it's really this goal of achieving collective consciousness, which underlies all their efforts. You know, a lot of people, some important characters to mention here are Henri Bergson, who was a French Jewish philosopher, Alfred North Whitehead, who developed what's called process theology. And yes, it's connected to the process church. Alfred North Whitehead, he influenced a whole slew of people, including Arthur M. Young. There's Sri Aurobindo, who's another one. So all these guys are exponents of what's referred to as spiritual evolution. And that's really what this is all about. It's the idea that evolution is not haphazard, as the secularists suggest, but evolution is actually the development of the universe towards becoming God or humanity. Towards becoming God. So these are ideas that were developed, have been in development for the last 150 years. But as you mentioned last time, really the leading representative of the idea is Teilhard de Chardin, who developed the idea of the noosphere and the omega point. So it's really with him that, you know, what's interesting is that there's so many tangents, but in Dan Brown's one of his recent books, which is The Lost Symbol. So The Lost Symbol is it's another like scavenger hunt type book where he's trying to discover the lost symbol of Freemasonry, and he eventually discovers that it's the Bible. But an important organization along the way or throughout the book is IONS, which is the Institute for Noetic Sciences. This is a institute which was headed by Willis Herman. Willis Herman, of course, of SRI, And it's called Noetic Sciences because it's in reference to Deschardins' Noetic concept, right? So Dan Brown, basically, he has his protagonist explain the significance of what the Noetic Science is. And I can't remember exact details, but the long story short is that humanity is God. Not yet, but humanity is evolving to become God. And I think he even refers to the internet and things like Wikipedia and so on and so forth, all these various collective projects as being representative of humanity's developing a collective consciousness. So, you know, Willis Harmon, his disciple was Marilyn Ferguson, who wrote the book which popularized the whole idea of the New Age in the first place.
The Aquarian Conspiracy.
Conspiracy in 1982. And as I mentioned, she conducted a survey to identify who were the leading influences in the movement. And number one on the list, after Huxley and Carl Jung, was Teilhard de Chardin. So I think we had a caller last time who mentioned that you know, this de Chardin influenced, you know, a whole range of people. Arthur C. Clarke, Marshall McLuhan, most importantly, as I mentioned, Marshall McLuhan's mentor was Walter J. Ong, and Walter J. Ong was friends with de Chardin. He influenced Philip K. Dick, and of course, as we well know, Terence McKenna. and of course, the New Age. So most of the, basically the New Age, the United Nations, not did I say New Age, I meant the United Nations. The United Nations has basically been explained by, you know, various secretary generals as being a project undertaken to fulfill de Chardin's vision. And I think that's pretty much it for the New Age. I mean, when you look at the New Age, it's really, you know, it's really a hodgepodge, but it's all the same ideas. And the Esalen Institute, of course, is a key organization there. And as I mentioned, R.D. Lang was a major influence. And it's really through Esalen and R.D. Lang's idea of rehabilitating the idea of schizophrenia and connecting that to shamanism, which leads to the neo-shamanism of Terence McKenna.
Well, or at least it's being sold that way so that, you know, to the public so that they buy it as a real thing, but it's actually dumbing them down. What I see is these guys are attacking the population and dumbing everyone else down to kill them off because it's the only way that they can evolve themselves is to kill everyone else off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the two things that you look at, you know, basically, if Huxley is the blueprint, then it's societal control through the use of a drug, right? And the most powerful way of convincing a population to use drugs is to convince them that it has religious purpose.
Absolutely, right.
And to ultimately worship the drug itself. Like, it's gone so far that they're now calling... you know, there's this, what is called a spirit molecule, right? Who's the guy who wrote...
Well, that's Rick Strassman. I interviewed him years ago. And so then, of course, you know, and then you read in his book, he admits that he was funded by the Scottish Free Right... Or, yeah, Free... Scottish... oh, geez. Scottish Right Freemasonry, as was MK Ultra.
Exactly. And he was operating under the advice of Willis Herman as well. Right? So what are they ultimately saying? They're saying that DMT is God's way of trying to communicate with us.
Right.
That DMT is God, right? The DMT, because DMT is practically in our DNA. It's like it's in our system already. So
right.
It's basically saying that, you know, it's the God molecule.
Well, you know, and years ago on Joe Rogan's forum, and never mind his promotion of all of this stuff, but, you know, Rick Strassman actually got into a debate with one of the members on his forum and got debunked on there, and then that was what sent him off to do more research on another book trying to substantiate all this. But after a while, you begin to see all of the sophism and spin, and you know how they use essentially their whole foundation that all of these guys are using for the most part is fallacious logic and circle jerking by citing each other in their own little academic cells.
And see, that's why it goes back to William James and the idea that a drug is a religious experience. It's a hoax. It's a counterfeit. It's a lie. It's a way of creating a phony religious experience to create a cult out of it.
Well,
it's
most
powerful way.
Yeah. Well, and you can't avoid the whole symbolism of the fruit of the tree and the fall of man,
And it's known as that, right? Like that's why Apple is Apple. It's
right. Well, absolutely, absolutely. And Steve Jobs is right up involved in all of this stuff.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. He got his stuff from Xerox Park. But Xerox Park was a CIA front. So, it goes all the way back, like the Soma, which is the drug, originally the drug of the Magi, but was also the word used by Huxley for the drug in his Brave New World, particularly the Halma, which is related to it, was identified with the tree of knowledge. Right? So it's, what does the Bible say? The Bible says that Adam and Eve took of the fruit. I can't remember the words exactly, but something like, and they discovered that it was good for making you wise. Well, what do people say psychedelics do? It opens your mind.
Right.
It's mind expanding. Believe that it is the fruit of the tree of knowledge.
Hold that thought, David. We'll be right back. I don't know if we have time to take maybe one caller after the break, but if anybody calls in, 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
Oh, everybody's happy now.
Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now.
Sex and we're back. Oh, boy. We have a lot of work to expose, David. Let's jump to a caller real quick. We've got Fred on line one. Hey, how you doing, Fred?
Real great. I'll try to speak very long. Hi, David, and hi, Jan.
We just mentioned your citation to Chardin the other day, so hopefully you got more good stuff for us.
Well, maybe. It'll take time, and not tonight. I want to expose the New Age agenda. That's really paramount with me and Theo Hart, however you pronounce his first name, Chardin, is a big issue with me. But just let me read two verses right quick here. So next time, later on, you know where I'm coming from. The Old Testament reference. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the earth and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Genesis 2:7. And I only got one eye. God formed Adam out of the earth, but was not alive until God breathed life into him. Okay, next one. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. That's Genesis 3:4, and that was the first lie, and he only changed one word, not. Anyhow, Satan deceived Eve into believing that she could become immortal since she died. We know that this is not true. Anyhow, the soul is not immortal. It is absolutely not immortal. Only through Christ can it become immortal. Anyhow, that's what I want to cover later on, but I won't take up any more time now. Great show. Great.
You know what's just real quick, what's interesting, Fred, with that is, it obviously I've taken these substances before. It doesn't kill you, but what it does is it kills the whole of society.
Well, hell yes, but that's the whole age, a new age agenda.
Yep. Well, exactly.
Dangerous just in itself, the new age agenda. I mean, I don't want to be talking and calling you all the time, but you're covering so much great stuff. But the New Age agenda is a biggie.
I agree. You have anything you want to add, David, before we wrap this up? You got about a minute and give out your website.
Transhumanism is the new face of the New Age movement.
And MK Ultra, for that matter.
It always was MK Ultra. I mean, the New Age movement is MK Ultra, right? The 60s was MK Ultra.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's just getting the word out. It's discovering this and getting it out to the people, sharing it with everybody so that they can wake up and realize that the whole 60s movement, all those rockers that were involved in the music, Hans and I have been exposing that, the transhumanism, you know, there's extreme overlap between my work and Dave's work and Hans's work. And, you know, we're all looking at the exact same people and situations over and over. It's just a, you know, a tiny step. Yeah. Your website again, David?
Thanks, Jan. It's conspiracyschool.com. As I mentioned, my latest book is Transhumanism, The History of a Dangerous Idea.
And you and I are going to have to do this again sometime soon. And Gnostic Media, GnosticMedia.com, GnosticMedia.com. Please make a donation while you're there. Support the show. I don't get paid for doing this, so I appreciate all of your support and can't do it without you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. Lark will be on tomorrow night, and I think I'll be here on Friday. See you then.